supposed to do. Well, we thank you for undertaking the appointment, accepting the appointment. Last case for argument, United States versus Silva, Mr. Holzinger.
Good morning, the court. May it please the court, I represent Mr. Juan Silva in this matter. I was also the trial counsel that went to jury on June 19, 2003. And Mr. Silva was sentenced on September 29, 2003, having been convicted of three counts. On appeal, Mr. Silva raises the issue regarding reversible error for the omission of out-of-court statements made by non-testifying confidential informants, agents, officers, and others. During the course of trial, issues arose regarding the hearsay admitted through testimony of the agents regarding informants, regarding surveillance, regarding telephone calls, regarding names of individuals, observation of a black Mitsubishi in Chicago, observation of a bar in Chicago.
Was the hearsay objection the only one made in this case?
It was not the only objection, but it was the majority. What's that,
Your Honor? Did you make a relevance objection?
There were a couple relevance objections made, but
I
not
have
more.
I have an awfully hard time seeing how this material is relevant. It sounds like the government's theory about why it's not hearsay means that it's not relevant. And given its potential for misuse by the jury, one would think it ought to be kept out. But if you didn't make a relevance objection to most of this stuff,
You know, being straight with the court, obviously, I think the record shows that there were a few relevant relevancy objections, but not as many as the hearsay. And
could you give me an example of what you objected to on grounds of relevance?
Your Honor, we had at one point three counsel when we were all joining in the objections. Mr. Foley made a relevance objection regarding the admissions of, I believe, the sample. I believe that took place on in the transcript near the end of the first day. That is one, I believe, Your Honor.
One other question.
Yes.
You did object to the prosecutor's closing argument, I take it.
Yes, I did, Your Honor.
And what reason did you give? Was the hearsay ground again?
I gave, yes, the hearsay ground again, Your Honor, and where the government started to use some of the things that were asserted that were not for the truth of the matter as truth. And I think at that point, I with all due respect to the trial court, when they responded to the objection and stated that the jury had the right to decide which what the evidence was admitted for, that caused some more confusion with this whole...
Certainly an extraordinary thing for the judge to say.
I think it added to the confusion of all this stuff being entered as... for the investigatory steps. I think it further confused the jury. I think it also highlighted the fact that we were unable to cross-examine some of the people that the hearsay was elicited from. Also, I think there's some confusion here with, even in the government's brief, when it gets into that sample being admitted. On page 17 of its brief, it refers to the sample and to Eduardo Martinez, Eduardo having received it. However, several pages of argument can go after that sample, in which the judge said that testimony would be stricken. The government then enters that evidence through just the sample, but not the portion referring to who they got the sample from is out again. And it just leads into confusion as to what the government and as to what the jury had as actual evidence of these discharge it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hollis. Mr. Baker?
May it please the Court, I'm Andrew Baker, Assistant United States Attorney on behalf of the government. The government's position is that the evidence about the sample and the negotiations were either admitted as co-conspirator hearsay, where they talked about the tapes, or were admitted to explain the non-hearsay.
What did the judge say when he said, what did the judge mean when the jury will determine what the evidence shows of why it was admitted? If it was admitted for a different purpose, they'll make that decision. And if the evidence was not admitted for that purpose, they will so take it into account. What does that mean? I can't figure it out. Maybe if you was, if one was there, one understood what he was driving at. The intonation.
Bad joke, you had to be there.
I have no knowledge of that more than you, Your Honor. I read the record as you did.
This is a terrible problem, isn't it? And it's one I had hoped you would deal with in your brief, right? This comes up during closing argument. The defendant is contending that the prosecutor made use this evidence for the truth of the matter stated.
Correct.
And objected. And the judge gives this garble to the jury, which says basically do what you want. And your brief says zippo, not one word about the closing argument. What are we to take out of this?
Well, I think that
sounds as if he was telling the jury to rule on admissibility.
Or
is that how you read
I
it?
I think that's certainly one way it could be read, which is obviously improper.
Right. And it would be obviously improper to allow the jury to make any substantive use of it because it had all been admitted on condition that it was not for the truth of the matter stated. It seems to me, if I were a juror in this case, listening to the argument the prosecutor delivered, it sounds like an argument using this for the truth of the matter stated. An objection is made, and then this garble comes out.
Some of the evidence that was objected to and that response was given to was properly admitted co-conspirator hearsay. Some was, there's no question, unquestionably, some of it was evidence of that was admitted for limited purposes.
What were the proper purposes, by the way? All your brief said, all that was said at trial was, well, this is to explain what the agent was doing. If that's a proper purpose for this evidence, the record can just be larded with hearsay. And although we may admire juries and think they can generally put out of mind the improper use, I mean, this sounds like a formula for just dropping buckets of hearsay in the trial and preventing the defendant from cross-examining the witnesses against him.
Well, there were various statements made, third-party statements made, properly show why an agent went to a place.
Yeah, why is that relevant, why the agent went to a place? Why doesn't the agent just say, I was going there to pursue my investigation? He doesn't have to drop in damning testimony that can't be cross-examined.
Well, in the Breland case, they had, the court admitted evidence that they went someplace because of a...
No, but the rationale, you want to admit the evidence so that the jury isn't puzzled, they don't go away thinking that they don't understand why things happen and so on. So that's the rationale. So can you defend this evidence on that ground? That it was somehow important to avoid jury confusion and
the jury was otherwise going to think the agent was an officious intermeddler spying on the innocent.
And I think it does show that they have a reason to go there and they're not inventing this thing or entrapping anybody.
Was there an entrapment defense?
No. The other purpose. And other hearsay they objected to was admitted for limited purposes with by officer sending information to another officer in regard to that that stop. That evidence was all testified to by that agent, and it indicated why the officer went ahead with a forfeiture because he found out the explanation for the money was false. The officer that conducted that investigation also testified.
Well,
That
and now, having done this, why is it appropriate to bring any of this up in the closing argument? If the only worry was that the jury would think that the official was engaged in inappropriate spying, that's already been done. Why do you bring it up again in the closing argument, other than to remind the jury of the truth of the matter stated?
All the evidence that was the closing argument objections didn't go to all of the testimony that was admitted as co-conspirator hearsay, which the argument does.
Well, it would be kind of nice if your brief had gone through and said, okay, these are legitimate hearsay problems, these are co-conspirator. But as I say, your brief didn't even mention it. You've got your head in the sand. This is your opportunity.
I thought I did mention which was legitimate hearsay in the brief. We went through the negotiations as to why certain conversations were not hearsay because they were admitted as co-conspirator hearsay. The tape negotiations with Alvarado, for example, that established that there was an Alvarado involved in the negotiations and a Juan were co-conspirator hearsay, not our co-conspirator statements, not hearsay.
How long was the trial?
Day and a half, I believe.
Is it the notion that you had to pad it out somehow? It would have been over in an hour if you just used the direct
evidence.
No, I don't believe it would have. It was a question about padding or any reason to go, if the government wanted to go a second day. It was,
did the defendant put in the case?
One defendant of the two on trial put, who ultimately ended up in trial, the third one, of course, was separated out, but the other defendant, not the one before you, put on evidence as to the source of the money recovered on the Bloomington seizure, which some of the government's evidence went to that investigation.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Baker. Mr. Holzinger, does he have any time? 1 minute left, okay.
As to the length of the trial, started on the morning of the 18th. There was a break because we had to wait for the jury pool, and we started again in the afternoon, and we went through Thursday. So we went Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday on the jury. And I think, again, some of the confusion that the court is asking about regarding the hearsay and the use of it in closing and through the case hits in the heart of how do you deal with this as it's coming up, and the people that are the source of the hearsay, the source of the information, are completely unavailable at trial, and then it is, you know, incorporated into the closing as the truth, and then it's almost like the hammer hits the nail when the judge says we're going to, you know, let the jury decide what the evidence is. And I thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Ryan. You were appointed, were you not?
Yes,
okay, well, we thank you for accepting the appointment and for your efforts on behalf of your client, and thank Mr. Baker also. So the court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.